What's up, everybody?
Yo, what's going on, dude?
Super excited for today's live stream. Bit of a surreal interview we're doing today.
Yeah, fucking crazy, right? Vanguard's getting bigger, guys. Got a real fucking catch for you today.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. We're super excited to bring you this exclusive Vanguard interview. Super excited to chat with someone who we talk about, quite frankly, all the time on this show. So it's only fitting that we engage with him in person in a dialogue ourselves and share that with all you wonderful people out there listening. We got some great questions from Mr. Dorr. And again, as someone who's been aware of and listening to Jimmy for forever now, seemingly, it's just really surreal and exciting to get a chance to talk with him. So again, we're waiting on him to join the live stream. He should be here shortly. So we're just going to be chatting in the interim while we wait for him to show up. But again, we're super excited, and a big thank you to Mr. Jimmy Dorr for joining us today.
Yeah, like Kevin said, we're waiting on Jimmy to join the stream. But before we get going, we do want to, as always, shout out our patrons, people who support us at patreon.com/thevanguardchannel. We've recently been talking about how we're going to shake up the perks for being a patron. Right now, as it stands, we pretty much realize that anybody who is a patron is just a patron because you want to support the show. Gavin and I have recently been we've always kind of prioritized making all of our content available just because it's the most egalitarian approach, and you know, we always feel a little weird putting out exclusive content. But we're going to start to do some more hangout sessions for our Vanguardian patrons just as like a thank you. And so maybe if you guys want to get your questions in the super chat a little easier, and you can just ask them, you don't have to super chat them, you can just put them in the comment section on more of like a patron only live stream kind of a deal. So that'll become available to any of our Patreon members, and we'll likely just react to like a movie that we like or talk about something fucking random that's not politically related, just so we can all decompress and talk shit and hang out.
Yeah, and another super exciting announcement for the patrons that we're unveiling actually as soon as tonight or tomorrow at the latest is our Vanguard Discord community. We're going to have a Discord server rolling out for all you great Vanguardians out there, but everyone on the Patreon, members, comrades, and Vanguardians. So again, all you have to do is chip in $1 a month and you will get access to that community. It's going to be a really fun time, a great little online community for people that watch the show and they like to talk about similar things that we talk about here. It's going to be a lot of fun, and Zach and I can't wait to, you know, further engage with our community that way. But yeah, just another extra for those of you supporting us out there. We appreciate it so much. We just wanted to make sure that you guys are getting your money's worth. Even if you're just paying a buck, it really does matter. And we just appreciate that so much.
Yeah, and for anybody who doesn't know, any of the money that we gather through our Patreon or ad revenue on YouTube or any of those kinds of things, Gavin and I are putting into a fund so that we can repair our Sprinter van and create some better, more in-depth, on-the-ground mini-documentary series as we go across the country and do some actual boots-on-the-ground reporting of what the fuck is going on while this country burns, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So we're super excited about that. And something we're going to be doing more of as we grow as a channel is really make our Patreon more robust, add some benefits, add some more, you know, member only content stuff, because we really do, again, want to make sure you guys are getting your money's worth for supporting the Vanguard Patreon. And if you do want to be in on the ground level when that stuff starts dropping, again, that's patreon.com/thevanguardchannel. It's super appreciated. That being said, it does look like our special guest has entered the live stream.
The man of the hour.
Yeah, of course, he needs no introduction. If you watch this channel, that's for sure. But yeah, Mr. Jimmy Dorr, thanks so much for joining us today. We're psyched to talk to you.
It's good. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me. And I'm really excited to hear about you adding robustness to your Patreon program.
Oh, no, thank you.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be real robust. But yeah, thanks so much for joining us, Jimmy. How are you doing?
That's what they used to call coffee when I was a kid. They were robust.
Blend, yeah.
Yeah. A robust blend. Yes, exactly. Colombian robust blend. Yeah, and but that's great. It's great to see your patrons getting up to the level of gourmet coffee. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. We're right up there with Folgers now.
Yeah. The Young Turks, they're selling coffee, so maybe you guys...
Yeah, vanguard.com/coffee.com or whatever they do.
Exactly. What I like is the way that the Young Turks does all their sales. It's not sleazy or underhand, or it doesn't feel like televangelist bullshit at all.
Yeah, it's something that we've pointed out here. It almost kind of makes it unwatchable, right? You feel like you're watching an infomercial. Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to... I mean, If it's fucking terrible, I'm sorry, but it is. It's bad.
Yeah.
Well, I like how they do it. they try to make it like it's just goofing around. Hey, get an emoji. It's super fun. It's super fun to give you money. What the fuck are you talking about? Anyway, I like to rip on them. It's fun.
We're going to be doing some more of that here. I got some questions on TYT for you, Jimmy. But did you have anything you wanted to get started with, Zach, before we jump right in?
One thing that I learned today, just kind of offhandedly that I didn't know, Jimmy, was that you went to Columbia College of Chicago. Is that correct?
Yeah, I tell people when they ask me, where did you go to college? I always say Columbia. I just leave it at that. And then they think
me too. I have the same formula. That's why I was asking. I went there, was there for 6 months, lost $30,000 in my fucking ass before I moved back to Kansas City. But I went to Columbia, guys.
Now, what made you decide to go to Columbia? Can I ask you that?
Very little faith in myself to do anything else. And I got accepted there. It sounded like a prestigious school. I could get the fuck out of Kansas City and go to Chicago, which sounds really nice if you're from the Midwest and not Chicago. And then you get there, it's really fucking cold. I was working for a film rental house for less than minimum wage as a contractor in Chinatown, this place called Magnanimous Media. You know, and I was there when Trump got elected too. So I was there for all the protests outside of Trump Tower, that
Trump
kind of
towers?
Thing.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So how did you find Columbia College? So I went there. Now, I graduated Columbia College. Now, this is really going to age me, but I graduated in 1989. And then I went into comedy. I didn't get a job. I got my degree in marketing communications is what they called it. See, back then, I don't know what Columbia College became this big thing. When I went to it, it was just like if you were kind of artsy and didn't want to go to college, you went to Columbia College and you could go into theater and go into television. I wanted to go into writing. And it was called marketing communications, but I wanted to go into advertising and write advertising because, you know, I grew up with, Dick Van Dyke, he was in advertising and that's what I thought anyway, but he was actually a comedy writer, but it was I thought that was a cool thing to do, to write ads and stuff. And I wanted to be in beer commercials and I thought that was funny and you could be, it was like a creative, like I was a bricklayer. So to me, that was such a huge opening of For a sure. world to me to go into like to be creative. And so when I went there, you would get taught right by the people who were doing it. That's what I liked about Columbia College. So the guy who was teaching me how to write copy, I would go home and turn on the TV and his commercial would be on the fucking TV. And I was like, that is so exciting to be taught by someone who's actually doing it instead of someone who's just an academic. Yeah. And so I got real hands-on training and I put together my sample book. And then I became a comedian. I never went. I guess I didn't really want to get a job.
Yeah, fuck me neither, right? I went to school to be a filmmaker, right? So filmmaker, you know, I spent 6 months in film school there, but yeah.
Now we're doing this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to make documentaries, so, you know. Oh, yeah, it's extremely expensive now, yeah.
It's like $40,000. So like my nephew, who has some talent, right? He can sing and act and stuff.
Yeah.
And when he got out of high school, he wanted to go to Columbia College and it was $40,000 a year. And my brother was telling me, I said, well, does he really want to be an actor? And my brother's like, he's really serious about it. And I said, well, why don't you should give him $40,000, tell him to move to New York, get in an acting class. And that here, you're going to give him a little, this will be a little cushion for him to start his career because going to college for acting is ridiculous.
It's crazy expensive out there. I got accepted technically to Columbia too, but I was like, fuck this. There's no way I'm going into debt for that. I went to University of Kansas City, Missouri, and probably got honestly about the same caliber of education. So, hey, thanks so much for that super chat, by the way, everyone. To get into a first question for you, Jimmy, this is something I've just been dying to hear from you. So I've been watching Lefty YouTube for so long now that I remember when it wasn't controversial to like the Jimmy Dore show. And I was just wondering what it's like being one of the most polarizing figures on the left. And also, what do you think that says about the left, the fact that you are as controversial as you are?
Well, what do you think it is that makes me controversial, that I didn't go along with an evidence-free conspiracy theory that red-baited everyone's political enemies on the left? Is I didn't go along with that, so that makes me controversial. What makes me controversial? That I told the truth about the Syrian gas attacks when everyone else was repeating CIA talking points? What makes me controversial? That I told the truth about Bernie and the CARES Act, and I told the truth about his campaign being shitty, and the fact that what makes me controversial? That I'm now telling the truth about the trustest Democrats in the squad, that I'm actually trying to hold them to account for what they ran on and what everybody worked so hard to do to get them there. And so I will hold them accountable where no one else will. And so that makes me a lightning rod for criticism. And, you know, the shit libs come at me and I'm used to that. What has been really surprising is the people on YouTube who have nothing to lose, who act like they do, and they won't tell the truth. It's just amazing. So I'll tell you, it's weird. I'll tell you that. It does feel weird to be controversial for you know, like when I trended, when they came at me and I was trending on Twitter and they're writing hit pieces on me in the Daily Beast and Newsweek. The reason why they were doing that was because I was doing good work, not because I got caught. I got caught committing a felony Jimmy, it was embezzling money. Did you know that he was embezzling money? No, that's not why I was trending, because I was advocating for healthcare for people in the middle of a deadly pandemic and using their own words, the politicians' own words against them. It wasn't me who said, stop using polite language. That was AOC. It wasn't me to said, start agitating, start making people uncomfortable. That was AOC. I was just doing what she advocated me to do. And that's why. So it's weird to be considered divisive? What was it?
Polarizing, I think.
Yeah. Polarizing, because I'm advocating for things all lefties are supposed to be on board for, which is holding politicians to account. And the shit that they've already advocated for. I didn't make stuff up for the Justice Democrats to advocate for. They're the ones who advocated for this shit. Now I'm just holding them account because we all worked to get them elected. We worked to get.
So
it feels weird.
Yeah. So you're saying the left is more in lockstep with the establishment. At least you think that's what's essentially revealed by the fact that you're so damn controversial.
That's exactly right. Yes. There is no left in America. There's no organized left in America. The Democratic Party is not a left party. AOC said that in her own words. She said it's a center right party. And her next words was, and we can't even get a vote on Medicare for all. We can't even get a vote on it. Up or down, we should have a vote. Those are her words. So, there is no left. And the proof of it was when we organized, Force the Vote. You saw what happened to the left. Half the left, like Ryan Grimm at The Intercept, then tries to gaslight everybody about Force the Vote and diffuse the energy from it in order to protect and run interference for politicians that they have access to. The Young Turks do the exact same thing, even though their audience sees through them, right? And then the other shows with an MSNBC contract, they do the same thing. So you saw that happen, right? And then you saw the people who were on board for Force the Vote, even after it was over, they wouldn't hold the people accountable. I was the only one still, I think, on YouTube telling people to stop donating to the Justice Democrats. That's how you hold them accountable. And anybody who says they're holding them accountable without telling people to stop donating to them is bullshitting you. That's not.
Well, so if you do donate to them, you're going to end up donating to fucking a bunch of neoliberal corporatists now after AOC gave out $160,000 in hard working people's donations, right? She's going to happily tout the fact that she doesn't take corporate dollars, which is great. So now you're just using working class people's dollars to fucking work against them. So it's almost like if you do donate to AOC, you're literally working against yourself.
Yeah. So you donate to a candidate or a politician who says that they're to the left of the establishment and they don't take corporate money. And then you take that money and you give it to someone who does take corporate money and is against everything I'm for. So again, it's happening right in front of our eyes. The Obamafication of AOC and the Justice Democrats. And, you know, I'm the only one. I hope it stops. I hope that they start actually doing what they said they would. And a hostile takeover of the Democratic Party. It looks like that's never happening. It looks like they're not going to, not only are they not going to do that, they're not even going to try to do that. Like, they're not even going to try, like, you know, the whole thing of we got to elect Joe Biden and then push him left. Bernie won't even try to push. Bernie is acting like he works for Joe Biden instead of he's an independent senator, not even in the fucking party, who was there to push him left. He's not pushing him left. He's running cover for him and gaslighting people like you, me, and everybody who ever supported him in what? In aid of the party. He's out there telling you this is going to cut the poverty, child poverty in half, when he knows that's bullshit. He knows when that was, again, Columbia University did that. They did the research that said that this COVID bill has the potential to cut child poverty in half. And then they took $15 minimum wage out, and the Columbia said still the same thing. That's bullshit. They just took the $15 minimum wage out of their assessment of what the COVID bill relief would do. And they kept the results in that it would cut child poverty. It's not. This is garbage.
What is
a one-time $1,400 payment that's means tested? It, you know, the other, the, again, what I say on my show and what they will never say on establishment news is that no other country in the West is handling their COVID like this. If they shut your business down, they pay your employees' salary. That's what's happening in the rest of the world. That's not happening here. Plus, the rest of the world already has Medicare for All. And there was a study that said that 33% of the COVID deaths could be directly related to a lack of Medicare for All.
Yeah, it's crazy. Do you think it's insane? Because I do. How few people are seemingly waking up to this fact and pointing it out, at least in this space or industry, because it seems like the Justice Democrat Project did come from a genuine place of understanding that the Obamas of the world were not enough. And now a lot of those exact people are turning around and pretending like the squad and AOC and Bernie Sanders are doing enough and that it's not okay to criticize them, even though, like Zach said, with this donation of all of her donor money, it just seems so clear to me, clearer than ever before, what the real nature of these progressives in Congress is.
Hey, I felt yes. I mean, if you can't see what's happening right now, I guess you just what is it? You get the representation you deserve or something like that. And you deserve it. I mean, they're flipping you off with both hands right in your face. Hey, will you fight for the $15 minimum wage? No, I won't. But we need the $15 minimum wage. That's like, what is enough? They'll go and tweet like that we need it, but they won't do the actual. I can tweet about it. You know what I can't do? I can't withhold my vote on a must-pass bill. That's what they should be doing, is withholding their vote on a must-pass bill and holding press conferences and telling people what they're doing and raising awareness. They're not doing anything except tweeting. That's what I do. They said I wasn't an approved grassroots organizer for Force the Vote. Well, I did organize a town hall that got 100,000 people there, and none of them showed up to it. So I don't know what you call that. I would call that organizing.
Yeah, well, that kind of.
There were more people at that fucking town hall than are members of the DSA.
Yeah, and that kind of leads me into my next question for you, which is that a lot of people, you know, say a lot about, you know, oh, the responsibility that people who are in this space have, which is, I guess, you know, sharing their opinions on the internet, you know, telling jokes, whatever, making people want to watch their program, right? And I'm just wondering if you have a reaction to that. You know, it seems like the more attention a show gets, people want to demand that you kind of change exactly what got you to the dance in the first place, right? As soon as people actually watch what the fuck you're doing, it's like, oh, all you're covering is this one thing that I don't want you to fucking talk about. Like, go back to doing your show the way you did it when nobody fucking watched it. And obviously your show is at a scale that's wildly more successful than ours, but I imagine but you get the scale that criticism at a scale that's also, I feel like, wildly more. So I just wondered if you had a reaction to that.
Well, yeah, you know, I used to tell them at the Young Turks, I try to remind them, hey, you know, we're supposed to be alternative. We're supposed to be the alternative to the establishment news. You're supposed to give the alternative. And when people in the last 4 years, I don't know if you guys owned a television, but if you turned on cable news, it was Trump, 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 instead of how we got Trump, 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 Trump. And so that was my mission at my show, was to show everybody how we got Donald Trump. And everybody else's mission was to exploit Donald Trump outrage for clicks. the Young Turks don't get a fuck any traction unless they put Donald Trump. And they were doing that constantly. And I kept telling them, would you guys cover something else? I mean, the reason why I started the Aggressive Progressives was because none of us could stand watching that fucking show anymore. Nobody could watch the main show at the Young Turks. Who worked at the Young Turks? It was such garbage. Fucking loser Donald segment after loser Donald segment. You're doing an hour show and 55 minutes of it is about Donald Trump. You're not an alternative to fucking anything. But now we know why they were doing that, because they were courting Clinton donor vote money. That's what, that's that. Yeah. And so people come to me, they go, why don't you ever go after the Republicans? Because I think people have that covered. The problem isn't that we have a Republican Party. The problem is there isn't an opposition to them. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And that's what my show is pointing out. And so, yeah, it's hilarious when people want to tell me how I should do my show. It's like, you can go do your show. I'll do my show. You go do your show. And my show will actually be serving the public and providing a service. Yours will be doing bullshit fluff fleeces on fucking Donald Trump, Orange Man, bad outrage for clicks.
Yeah. Well, that's a great segue into a question I had for you. And you kind of briefly mentioned it already. But going back to TYT, I used to love TYT back in the day when you were on the panel. And not just because of the excitement of the Bernie campaign, but also because it genuinely did seem like they were more interested in facilitating real conversations about lefty politics and stuff like that, and speaking truth to power. At least that's how I remember it. You know, I've grown since then and matured myself a lot. But I think since 2016, or around that time, it's undeniable that the network has just gone noticeably downhill. It's almost barely recognizable these days if you turn it on, in my opinion, at least. And I was just wondering if you think that there is a, you know, direct correlation between that shift in their quality and programming and the corporate cash that was essentially begun to become infused to the company around that time.
100%. Yeah. I mean, they can't swear anymore. I don't know if you noticed that they stopped swearing. They made us start wearing suit coats. And then, I mean, these are just the surface things. And then I was told, by an executive at TYT that we have to move to the center now. And we understand that. And,
like someone literally just told you that
the Young Turks. Wait, yeah, that's, I don't want to gloss over that. That's so fucked up. But, they literally were like, oh, pacify yourself. Like shut the fuck up about being too like worked up about progressive politics at the Young Turks.
I was complaining. I was lamenting about what the fuck was going on and how, you know, you guys aren't really alternative news anymore. That's I remember what I said was, I always knew what I would do if Fox News bought the Young Turks, but I didn't know what I would do if Young Turks just became Fox News. And this is what I feel like has happened. And you guys are just garbage now, doing McCarthy smearings of your and repeating CIA talking points uncritically. You're even smearing Julian Assange. They even smeared Julian Assange, and they still won't take that video down while he's being tortured and prosecuted by Donald Trump. Cenk Uygur and Anna Kasparian tell the world, their whole audience, that he's working for Donald Trump as Donald Trump's trying to kill him. I don't think there's anything more disgusting you can do in the journalism space than what they did. And their reputation, they should be over for doing that. And all they got is bad faith attacks against me. And everybody sees through it now, because finally I'm able to tell the truth about it. I don't feel any sense of loyalty to them at all. Because when I decided to do Force the Vote, their executive producer, Anna Kasparian, decided to smear me in public for absolutely no reason, in the most vague way. She didn't even have anything. She just didn't like me. And this guy's a bad guy. And this is a great idea, but he's a bad guy. And I want everybody to know that. This guy who worked for us for 10 years made millions of fucking dollars for the Young Turks, millions of dollars for them. This guy, he's a bad guy. I want you to know that now that he left. And by the way, he bit his tongue for 4 years while we pushed an evidence-free conspiracy theory. And he bit his tongue. Well, I'm not biting my tongue anymore. And now I don't know if you watch their show, but their live stream viewers, they get half the live stream viewers that a pothead jagoff comedian in his fucking garage gets. That's what great crisis counselors they are. They decided that the smart play for Force the Vote was to try to discredit Jimmy Dore. Well, I think we know who won that fight now.
Yeah. And it's just trash these days. Like, even if your politics don't necessarily align with the politics of what they're espousing anymore, just from a like objective standpoint, the curation of topics is poor. The guests they have on is poor. The way the show is
MSNBC. What is the difference between their show
it's
and MSNBC?
Shit. Yeah, it's dog shit.
It is dog shit. They bring on people that call Brianna Joy Gray and Uncle Tom. They're welcome on their panel. Yeah. Welcome on their panel.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Bernie's press secretary.
Yeah.
Those people are talking on the. They got another guy, Josh Fox, who has a show over there. He's not even allowed at the WBAI studios anymore because sexual harassment, and he stole money from the indigenous people. And who gives him a stroke, Fox? DYT, you're well. Of course you're welcome over here because he got caught grifting, taking money from fucking corporations. He tried to shut down Michael Moore's movie that exposed their grift. And who does he got a job with? Fucking Cenk Uygur and TYT. Of course he does. They're garbage. They're 100% garbage. They're spiraling out of control. They did a televangelist style fucking fundraising for a whole year. They would tell you to send them money in December when people were desperate. They would say, send us money and we'll get you so we can get you the $2,000 checks. Yeah. Send us money. That's what the Young Turks were doing. So that's why I guess I'm polarizing because I call out, people who are actually faux progressives and are here to sheepdog us into a pro-war corporate party.
It's annoying.
And that's what the Young Turks are here to do.
Yeah, and it's annoying to me because we were talking about, you know, using your platform irresponsibly or whatever, but, you know, spreading lies about Julian Assange, that is irresponsible way to use your platform when you have that many subscribers. And again, you know, I just think it's ridiculous that that's not more often pointed out. I think there's a level of hypocrisy exposed in the way that commentators are covered.
I would agree. Why am I the only one who pointed out the Young Turk smeared Julian Assange? Why am I the only one who did that? Why is no other fucking YouTube show covering that? Why? Because they all want to get a guest spot on the Young Turks at some point in their life? I guess the answer is yes. My advice to those people is look who's getting fucking bigger numbers. They're just another YouTube channel now. They're nobody. Yep. They're Cenk Uygur. They've thrown it all away, and they did it for corporate cash, and so they had to suck up to the Democratic Party. They had to smear real activists who were doing Force the Vote. They had to smear Julian Assange, actual journalists, and now they're smearing fucking Glenn Greenwald as they're protecting Taylor Lorenz at the New York Times. That's what the Young Turks, that's their brand of journalism. They couldn't be bigger shit libs.
And I guess, do you think that's, I guess there's definitely a fracturing going on in YouTube, but it seems almost as if people have sort of gone that way as a way to avoid censorship, maybe. I guess that would be the most generous way that you could possibly, obviously, in case of TYT, it would be to chase, you know, millions of dollars. But there has been a wave of censorship that has come across YouTube. I know both of our shows have talked about what's going on with Status Quo. They're, you know, walking on glass right now, essentially running out of money. I'm wondering if you have at your show experienced any issues like that with YouTube, or is that something that you haven't had a problem with?
It's maddening what's happening with YouTube. They're wrecking YouTube, of course, and where they're doing it, why? Because they think it was going to give them more corporate profits. And what do I mean by that? Well, we are a threat to CNN and MSNBC and the establishment news shows. They've admitted so on air. They are complaining that there are some YouTube channels that get more views than CNN. Yeah, that's right. And they were like, we have to clamp down on them, right? And so what YouTube is doing is they don't want to have another negative article on the front page of the New York Times saying that YouTube is putting ads on Nazis' videos, right? Yeah. Which is what the New York Times did. And so did CNN. And then they stuck me in that article at CNN to smear me, right? And the reason why they're doing that is because we're a competitor to them. And now, especially now that Donald Trump is no longer in the headlines, CNN's ratings, MSNBC's ratings, ABC, they're all crashing. And so now there's been a big ramp up in censorship on you've seen everybody getting demonetized left and right. And of course, you know, every day I wake up and I'm afraid to see what's happened to my channel. And when you talk to the people at YouTube, I'm lucky enough to be able to talk to them. They're not allowed to admit that there's even two different algorithms, something that YouTube has even publicly already admitted. The people that they're going to, for breaking news, they're going to favor authoritative news sources. So there is two algorithms that they're admitting to right there. So like if I try to cover, if there's a shooting, a mass shooting, and I try to cover, I'm not allowed to even cover it. They will take down that video. But CNN is, and Vox is, and, you know, the Daily Beast is, and MSNBC, but we're not. So it's not a level playing field at all. There, this the Silicon Valley, meaning Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, they are in bed with the Biden administration. They will censor on behalf of him. We saw what happened with the Hunter Biden story, which turned out to be 100% true and accurate. They are going to, the establishment is so. Again, what the right wing used to say, oh, the media is liberal because they felt it favored the Democrats. Well, the media does favor the Democrats, especially now, but that doesn't mean they're liberal. They favor the establishment. Yeah. That's what they favor. They favor whoever the establishment is. And the Democrats are pro-war, pro-Wall Street, pro-Amazon, pro anti-union, and so they're not liberal is what I'm saying. They're not left. There's not liberal. There is no lefties in America, and I think Forced to Vote proved that even when we couldn't even get the people who are the most left elected in Congress, people who are self-described socialists wouldn't even cross Nancy Pelosi, one of the most unpopular politician in the country, less popular than Trump, and they wouldn't cross her. So that's you know, and when you point that out, it's called polarizing. But we saw Cenk Uygur crying, almost crying on camera, begging them, please stop making me look like an asshole. Please use your leverage. Please, do you know you're going to make Jimmy Dore right? Well, they did know that, and they did it anyway. And it's so much fun for me to watch the squad and the Justice Democrats make fucking idiots out of the people who support them. It is. I'd rather they not. I'd rather they actually try to institute progressive policies. But if they're not going to, and the people who are supposed to call them out aren't going to, I love to watch them get humiliated. And that's what Cenk Uygur was, humiliated. And everybody else who supports them are humiliated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's certainly true. And you're correct. You're exactly correct that shows like yours and shows like ours are competition to CNN and the mainstream media. But they're not just competition. They're a complete alternative. And I think that what they're really terrified of is that when people start consuming shows like yours and ours, that they don't come back. Because, you know, when you're when you're presented with reality and someone telling you the truth, you're not going to want to go back to hearing lies from some boring asshole on TV. So I think it really is a threat to their business model, and that's what it essentially is all about. And you know, with also maintaining control over people's ideology and what is acceptable to talk about. Another thing I wanted to get your reaction to, because we were kind of talking about YouTube and specifically lefty YouTube and kind of the shifts we've seen in coverage. Obviously, your critics love to throw around the word grifter when they talk about you, but everybody's in my observation,
we're grifters.
Yeah,
I don't even do this for a living.
Well, in my observation, Jimmy, the reason why I say that is that you've actually been very consistent ideologically compared to other people on this space. After Bernie got screwed in the 2016 primary, your message has been extremely consistent in its anti-two-party messaging, and you've been pointing out the progressives in Congress red flags for some time now. To me, from what I can tell, those that have grifted the most are those that, you know, kind of came up on the momentum of the Bernie Sanders campaign, but quickly changed their tune to advocate for much, much less revolutionary politics as soon as it was clear that there was no longer a Bernie campaign to capitalize on or to ride the coattails of. I'm thinking of characters like David Pakman. You know, if you look at their channels, they're doing what you were talking about CNN does, talking about the return of Trump and, you know, Trump's coming back and Trump 24/7, instead of actually talking about the structures of oppression and capitalism, which obviously are still very active and definitely are still around. And these people literally went from advocating for a political revolution to defending the Democratic establishment that's currently in charge. So I was just wondering if you agree or have a response to that, and if any specific YouTubers come to mind that have really kind of made that, you know, conscious shift.
I mean, it's obvious. I don't have to name names. I mean, some of the people are in the last few months, they've just gone blue MAGA, like you can't believe. And I'm just like, what is in it for you to do that? I don't understand. Yeah. And they love to. So what they've totally taken, just like when they started calling Bernie a sexist, it totally took any meaning out of the word, right? So now, mm-hmm. now it does. If you call Bernie a sexist, when you call Trump a sexist, it's not really going to land.
Yeah.
And so, when you call me a grifter, but Cenk Uygur takes $24 million from the right wingers to somehow do a lefty. He has a board. They literally have a board. Jeffrey Katzenberg has a guy who sits on his board. Buddy Romer has a guy who sits on his board. And somehow that's not a grift. I mean, come on. What they mean when people say that about me, what they mean is I'm doing a news show that's super popular and they don't like what I'm saying. So they want to discredit it. And that's the only, Jimmy Dore, what is he? He's a grifter. Why? Because he's doing a YouTube show and people like it. No. What do you mean? Well, he's talking about things for clicks. And the other shows are talking about things so they won't get clicks. I don't know. What is that? I don't understand what you're saying. What? That's why people put thumbnails on their videos and headlines so we can get more distribution and more eyes on the content we're doing. Everybody does that. They're trying to say, so I'm doing a grift because I did the hardest thing possible in YouTube journalism, which was go against the herd mentality of Russiagate and Syria gas attacks. That's a grift? You mean telling the truth when everyone else is calling you a conspiracy theorist for doing good work? That's a grift? Really? Okay, so all that is that's shit libs who don't want to hear the truth about the Democratic Party. So they try to discredit me because I'm telling the truth. But just like Joe Rogan, they can't stop me because I don't have a supervisor. I don't have a manager that they can call. They can't get me fired and I'm not looking for a fucking job. And the people who watch my show see right through. Whenever they come at me, it just boosts me. You know, when the Daily Beast did that hit piece, it boosted me. Now it makes me immune to the fucking next hit piece that comes out. And so the more they do that and the more they call me a grifter, it actually helps me. The more Ryan Grimm at The Intercept comes at me, it boosts me. It proves that instead of him going after the powerful, he's going to try and shit on a YouTuber. Why? Because I'm exposing them.
Yeah, what's up with Ryan Grimm, by the way? Is that dude like developed a cocaine habit? He seems like he's gone crazy on Twitter lately.
Yeah, he gets up. He's tweeting at 7 a.m. on Sundays, Saturday and Sundays. And it's like, hey, go play with your fucking kids already. You can go run interference for the Democratic Party all day long. Go play. It's like, well, what's happening is that we've outed him just like the Young Turks. And they were on the wrong side of the issue on forced to vote. And so now they're feeling it. They didn't believe that a pothead jagoff comedian in his garage could put such a hurt on him. And I am. And that's when you see Ryan Grimm tweeting, that's a guy fucking trying to save his reputation.
Well, it's crazy how he kind of ping pongs, right? A little bit. Like one day he'll be interviewing Howie Hawkins and the next day he'll be like trying to frame the Green Party as like an anti-public funding party. Oh, they're against this bill that would revolutionize campaign finance because they hate democracy. They're the Green Party. You know what I mean? It's trying to he's trying to have his cake and eat it too, essentially, which I just think people are smart enough to see through that nowadays. You can't do that. We have receipts.
Cenk Uygur does the exact same thing. He I don't know if he, as soon as they didn't force the vote, he was like, you better start fucking forcing the vote on things. Like,
yeah, what? Dude, that was hilarious. That video that came out. Was like,
yeah,
I couldn't believe how fucking tone deaf or just like maybe in his own world he is. I don't know, but that was hilarious. The lack of.
Also, I just want to say shout out to David.David. And to address this comment, I think, you know, it's dead on. You know, what's your response, Jimmy, to these people out here that want to wag their fingers and look down at people that want to be entertained in some sense while they digest their news? And that's not to say, you know, they're only watching the Jimmy Dore show, but it does seem like there's a significant portion of woke liberals that want to, you know, look down upon and kind of have an elitist mentality about folks that are getting their news or at least getting part of their news from shows like the Jimmy Dore show.
Hey, if I didn't have any talents, I would be doing the same thing. I would be telling you people who are making the news entertaining are doing it wrong. You should be boring like me and uninteresting. You should have people walk away from you in a bar. You're so fucking boring. And that's how you should get your news. Your news should be boring, stupid, droll, and it should be repeating establishment talking points. That Jimmy Dore, why? What is he doing? Why? How does he get? Why he gets to be interesting and entertaining no matter what he's talking about? I don't think that's right.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I did want to kind of get into and ask you is, you know, we touched on it at the beginning. You kind of came into this wanting to be a performer, right? You said in the early 90s you were a comedian, just, you know, and obviously, you know, you're still
a comedian.
Well, right. Yeah, obviously. But before you got into politics, right? And so obviously our world is fucked up and broken. You have your own nightmare story with the American healthcare, you know, system. You know, you have skin in the game. You've lived it. And to us at the Vanguard, there really is no bigger joke than American politicians, right? So I'm wondering if you could snap your fingers and kind of heal the world, right? We're living in a world that, you know, Jimmy wants to live in. What are you telling people jokes about?
Oh, what would I be? I mean, if politics was all fixed, what would I make jokes
about?
Yeah,
if we snapped our fingers and we were in a utopia, right? People still want to laugh, I imagine. What kind of material are you going for?
Well, I would probably go, you know, back to dick jokes.
Back to dick jokes. A classic, a timeless.
You know, I love writing jokes like that. I love comedy. I love switcheroo jokes is what I call them. I just love when people are being goofy with a straight face. And like one of my favorite jokes I wrote is like, I was having sex the other night with my wife, and right in the middle, I pulled out and I stuck it in her vagina. Wow, did that feel different. Man, it fits like a glove. Like it was made for it. So I like jokes like that. I would go back to telling jokes like that. And I'm kidding. I actually only got my wife. I talked her into doing anal sex only one time. She said we had to quit because it was hurting. Apparently the strap-on was pinching her. So that joke's funny because I'm the victim. Anyway, so those are the kind of jokes I could go back to telling.
Yeah, that sounds like they would do just fine, Jimmy. That was
that was pretty good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, speaking of kind of bold populists, and this is someone we've been kind of researching for undisclosed reasons and doing a little bit of reading up on ourselves. But that's Mr. Jesse Ventura, who, of course, you've had a bit of a professional relationship filling in for him on his show at RT.
And such.
And I was just wondering, because we were super pissed about this here at the Vanguard, and I know you were too, which was how the Green Party basically didn't embrace him with open arms, you know, do anything they could to get someone to run for their party's nomination who could actually bring some attention, actually bring some notoriety, donation, volunteer, whatever, to the Green Party, which apparently doesn't have any interest in actually winning elections, has been proven a couple times now, at least on the presidential level. And I was just wondering if you had any guesses as to what the 2020 presidential election might have looked like if, by some miracle, Ventura had been able to run as a Green Party candidate and make a splash that way.
Oh boy, you know, I never really hadn't thought about it that much just because I knew he wasn't going to do it. But it would have certainly shifted the topic of the debates to the left in a very hard way. And they would have talked about our foreign wars in a real way, which they never, ever, ever do. You know, Joe Biden just upped the military budget. You saw that, right? It's gone from $733 billion to $750-something billion, just like that. And no town halls about... No town halls about it, no op-eds about it, no big fucking national discussion. They just do it. But if you want to relieve $50 billion in student debt, that's got to go through the committees, and that's got to be talked about. We got to hash it out. We got to get Joe Manchin's opinion. And anyway, and so by the way, wouldn't it be great if Bernie acted like Joe Manchin? Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes.
And why can that not happen, though? Why can that not happen? Like, I don't want to believe, and this could be foolish naivety. I don't want to believe that Bernie doesn't want this shit, right? Like, I want to believe that he does want everything that he's told us and everything he spent his years, you know, fighting for. Why does he refuse to play the fucking hardball that he knows he has to? He's not dumb. He knows what the fuck he has to do. He just refuses to fucking do it, and it maddens me and confuses me.
I think much like the Justice Democrats, if they would like to implement all of our progressive policies if they didn't have to fight to do them. But they have to actually fight to do them, so they're not going to do them. Bernie is a nutless wonder, and he told Chris Hedges and Shama Sawant in 2015, I'm never going to run in a third party because I don't want to end up like Ralph Nader. Look what they did to Tulsi Gabbard just because she was against the foreign wars. Look what they did to her. What the fuck? She didn't take corporate money. She had Bernie's back at every turn, and they still did that to her. Bernie saw that. He doesn't want that to happen to him, and he doesn't want to happen to him the same thing that happened to Ralph Nader.
Yeah.
I mean, Ralph Nader's been persona non grata. Bernie hasn't returned Ralph Nader's phone call for 20 fucking years. Yeah. So that tells you who Bernie is. So Bernie's a guy who likes the policies that we like, and he's not going to do anything to fucking make them happen.
Yeah. Well, do you think that Jesse Ventura might have been able to get to at least 5% as a third party? I mean, obviously,
yes. Oh my God! Of course, yes. So, that's the thing, right? So, the Green Party definitely would have got at least to the matching funds level, and they would have. Of course, they would have. Now, they'll say that, you know, Jesse is more libertarian than Green and all that stuff, and it's like the point is, Jesse's, you guys have to start building a party. And Jesse would have did that. Jesse would have moved the debate in a million ways to the left the way you wanted it to. Instead, we're left with Howie Hawkins, who Russiagated.
Yeah, and also has never, well, I'm not trying to take needless jabs at Howie, but he's also never won political office in any fucking race he's won to. He's 26, or he's 0 for 26. Jesse Ventura, yeah, he's never won any race he's ever won in. So that was why it was hard for me to get on Team Howie. We talked to him here at the Vanguard. Nice guy, I guess. But, you know, Jesse Ventura has, if anything, he's moved dramatically to the left in his age, right? You know, I've read about, a lot about his 98 gubernatorial run. Of course, he's to the right of where I am then. But he's also put out clips that we've commented on at the Vanguard where he says $12 million should be the maximum limit for what you can earn in a year in this country. You know, and it's like, oh, shit. All right, Jesse, like, that gang, like, let's do that. Let's, you know, and that's the kind of thing.
He wants to be that open about wanting to redistribute wealth. Yep. That puts you way to the left of anybody, even in the Democratic Party.
I think he's thinking about it honestly. Like, those are his ideas and his values. And if anything you want to say about Jesse Ventura is that he has conviction, right? If he's saying shit, it's from the heart. When he ran for governor, he did not write a single speech down until he was elected.
Yeah. And honestly, it's crazy that the fact that he used to be more of a libertarian wasn't something that attracted the Green Party to him. Because then, you know, take people that may still have beliefs like that, and he's the perfect person to convince them. You know, people like, you know, people that are in a different generation, maybe, that remember his gubernatorial run, he would have really connected with those folks, and they would have remembered the kind of populist energy that he, you know, brewed in Minnesota. I just think it was such a disappointment and really indicative of the fact that the Green Party is perfectly willing to waste people's donations and volunteer time and all that stuff behind a, you know, suicidal mission, essentially.
Yeah, when, and, you know, again, I don't want to punch down on the Green Party.
Sure, 100%.
I like the Green Party. I like that they came up with the Green New Deal. I supported Jill Stein and voted for her.
Me too. I voted for Howie Hawkins.
Truth be told, I voted for Howie Hawkins too. I know that sounds crazy. I know. I mean, just because I felt we needed to get a third party to get some numbers. But of course, you know, Howie Hawkins couldn't even get as many votes as one of my YouTube videos gets a lot of views. I mean, it was just unbelievable. It's like, and I told them that this is going to be the death of their party. And not because Howie Hawkins has crazy views or is a horrible person, mm-mm, but because he is the opposite of a charismatic person, right? The minute he starts talking, I just glaze over. And that's the opposite. It's like, you should hire a spokesperson to talk for you, so then maybe you could get some votes. Yeah. Because he's a marble mouthed guy, and that's fine to be that guy. But it's a horrible, you know, it's horrible if you're trying to be a political organizer and a leader and try to garner votes. He couldn't get his message out, and he's just the worst messenger possible. And that, again, I appreciate that Howie Hawkins actually advocates for workers. He shows up at union meetings, and he's been doing that. And this isn't to disparage him, even though it sounds horrible. I'm just, as an objective political observer, that was a horrible move. You picked a guy who has negative charisma and a marble mouth and a fucking, this was the year, you motherfuckers. This was the year for the Green Party, and they shot themselves in the head, and they didn't give a shit.
Yeah, well, that kind of leads me into the last question that I had prepped for you, Jimmy. You know, obviously here at the Vanguard, we've covered the MPP for about as long as we've been a podcast. And, you know, recently we have had a few volunteers on who have raised some concerns about transparency in the leadership structure. And, you know, we've reached out to the MPP leadership and we haven't heard back. And I just didn't know if you had a comment on that or if you had heard any of those complaints and had a take on it.
No, I mean, I haven't. I heard some of the original complaints, and then it turns out to be those are bad faith actors. And but, you know, with anything, there's going to be people who are detractors. There's going to be problems with the party. What I tell people who have problems with the way MPP is evolving is get involved and try to change it, or start another third party that you can. But right now, it seems like this is the one that has the chance, right? Because there's it's got more media attention. It's already got 150,000 people signed up to it or something like that. It's, so it's got even more people than the DSA did. So it's not going to sheepdog people back into the Democratic Party like the DSA, Brand New Congress, Our Revolution, the Justice Democrats. Those are all fucking, they see what's happening in the country. And they see that people are on a ledge, right? They're on a precipice of destruction. And they keep trying to paper it over and keep trying to get you to come back in and vote for their horrible fucking corporate party that is sticking a red, white, and blue dick up your ass. And so that, so they're using censorship now. They're using all these. And so what I would wish for is that people like Our Revolution, Justice Democrats, Brand New Congress, the Green, I wish they would all coalesce, come together and have a real progressive party with the Movement for a People's Party. And so because it can't be a less, these aren't left-right issues. We're not in a left-right time right now. What Joe Biden is doing is just like what Trump did, right? They're giving waste to Wall Street. He's ramping up the war budget and fucking everybody else. And so these aren't left-right issues anymore. When you organize, you have to organize on class, and that's what they're afraid of. So if you organize on class, all I did was interview a guy on the right, and people went fucking nuts. I interviewed a Boogaloo boy, and people were like, "You can't do that. You can't platform." I could fucking interview anybody I fucking want any fucking day of the year, and you can't stop me. And that drives them fucking crazy. And until we start talking to people on the right, nothing's going to change in this fucking country. But when we do align along a class structure, that is what will scare the shit out of them. And I've shown video after video on my fucking show of black people who aligned with the Klan to get shit from the government. There was the Black Panthers when Fred Hampton aligned with Southern racists in Chicago. And he got them to drop after they worked with him. They finally dropped their Confederate flag. So the way you change people is through dialogue and engagement. That's the only way to change, unless you want to have a war. Since Fred Hampton taught us, politics is war without violence. War is politics with violence. So I'd rather do war without violence. And you got to talk to everybody. You know, the way I had this guy on from the World Socialist website on my show right after I interviewed Magnus. And he was fucking blowing a nut over it. And I'm like, so how do you, when you go to organize people on the union floor, which that guy has never fucking done. I've been a union worker. I worked at UPS. I fucking labor. I know what it's like. I've been in three fucking unions here in Hull. I know how you organize. The way you don't organize is you don't show up on the fucking floor shop and say, hey, who here is a right winger? Who's here is a Trumper? Who here is a Boogaloo boy? Who's a Proud Boy? You guys are out. All right. Now, who's left? We're going to organize with that. That's not how it works. Most fucking people in unions voted for fucking Trump in the Midwest. That's not how you organize. You organize along class lines. You don't go left, right. Hey, who here's an environmentalist? Who's a socialist? Who's a democratic socialist? That's not how you fucking organize. And everybody knows that. And that's what scares them. When you stop going left, right, when you stop doing the politics of division, like Charles Barkley even fucking told us, yeah. That's what scares the shit out of them. So when we come together to oppose the establishment's war machine, their fucking rapacious Wall Street, their fucking healthcare machine, when we stand together to oppose that, that's what scares the shit out of them. And that's why they got to demonize me when I do it. And I'll never stop reaching out to people who are not on the same page as me politically. I'll never stop talking to half the country. When Bernie Sanders goes on Fox News, it's a brilliant move because he's bringing his message to them. But when I do it, oh, somehow it's fucking fucked up. Oh, Jim, you can't bring in a progressive. What are you doing that for? Because half the country is going to hear what I have to say. And now I got the number one news host in America, Tucker Carlson, to change his mind about Julian Assange. There's the benefit in going on that fucking show and going on those shows and talking to people who are not the same as you politically. There's a big upside to it that you can convince them of your ideas and your ideology. We're supposed to have a message for those people. The thing that drives people crazy is that guy Magnus, who came on my show, used to vote. Those guys were voting Democrat 25 fucking years ago, and they're not anymore. And that's what they don't want to talk about is why.
Yeah, quite frankly, I thought that whole episode was ridiculous and well said, frankly. Some people have been asking in the chat, and I wanted to quickly get your response before we go, Jimmy. Is there any chance we'll ever see a debate between you and Mr. Sam Seder?
I don't know who that is. I don't follow sports.
No? Never?
I don't know. Matt Orfila? Was that the guy Matt Orfila put that video about? That guy who's obsessed with me.
Yeah, the one who said
Did
your
you
name.
See that video, Matt Orfila? Yes, he's Jimmy Dores. Is that guy? Is that who that is?
It is. Yep.
Oh,
that fucking
that guy. That's a great video. Everybody should go watch that video. You should link to it in the show notes. That Matt Orfila's video. That guy's obsessed with me. I don't. I think that would be just. You don't want to validate mental illness like that.
I think a lot of people would love to see it, Jimmy, but I certainly understand that position as well. It's been awesome chatting with you. Totally surreal. As I said, I've been watching you since before it was controversial to watch you, and I'm going to keep doing it, frankly. So, you know, great chatting with you and meeting virtually. You know, I know you're a busy guy, so thanks for taking the time out of your day. Do you have any other questions for Mr. Dore or Zach?
Oh, no, I just wanted to say thank you and that I hope you're right, because I do agree with the point that there's no sense in fighting over whether we're going to join the Green Party, the Socialist Alternative, the DSA, the fucking whatever. We need a broad-based coalition that represents all of us, because if we continue to keep factioning off, I mean, that we're defeating ourselves before we even get started.
And I agree with you guys, and that's why I like your show. It comes up in my feed all the time now because I keep watching it.
That's fucking crazy.
And you guys seem to be, when I take a shower, I put you on. and you seem to be able to frame the issues correctly, and that's the important part. You know, that it's where you start. What's your jumping off point? What's your frame? And you guys seem to get that correct most of the time.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate your feedback, man. And it's crazy that you've listened to our show. Like I said, we just one day started a fucking show, and here we are. So it's insane.
Yeah. Well, where do you guys live?
We're in Kansas City. Yeah. We're actually from the same hometown as Thomas Frank, the writer.
Yeah. Oh, Thomas Frank. I love Thomas Frank. Did you ever read that Listen Liberal?
Oh, yeah. It's a great book.
Yeah, we've had him on the program.
That's what made me like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I read that book, I was halfway there already, and then I read that book, and I was like, no way. No way could I ever vote for
it. Will radicalize you. That shit tells you the truth about Clinton, the Democrats, the establishment in general. That book is the real deal, no doubt about it. And we love Thomas Frank, such a huge inspiration to our thinking here at the Vanguard. So a huge shout out if you're listening, I guess. But
you see his new book, what is it? The Establishment Said No?
No, the people know. Yeah, it's about populism and how populism actually started in Kansas, where Gavin and I are from, in the late 1800s as a coalition of farmers who were looking to band together and take on big ag. And free silver was their big issue. It was essentially they were trying to get off the gold standard.
You see how history repeats itself, right?
Exactly.
It's amazing how they find ways to squash progressive, independent, the people, basically. They find ways to squash the people. And they're doing it right now. They're doing it again. And they do it through infiltration, right? They do it through just like they got the Young Turks. People think, oh, I'm getting my lefty news. No, they've been infiltrated. They've been fucking compromised. And now they're there to sheep herd you back inside that pro-corporate Democratic Party. So nothing ever changes. Same thing with The Intercept. Same thing with the guy who wants to debate me. That's the whole fucking thing. I'll debate people who have MSNBC contracts on MSNBC.
Ooh. There you go.
That's what I'll do it. So the next how about that? If you have an MSNBC contract and you want to debate me, let's do it on MSNBC.
Well, I would definitely tune in there. Jimmy, thanks so much for coming on and chatting with us today. It was a super great time chatting with you. And do you have anything that you need to plug? Obviously, people know where to find you at the Jimmy Dore Show and on Twitter.
Can I just also mention before I go is that getting back to that grifter thing we were talking about. I don't know of any other YouTube show who stopped asking for money when COVID hit.
True.
Do you know of any other YouTube show that stopped asking for money when COVID hit? I don't. In fact, if everybody else ramped it up, especially the Young Turks, they acted like somehow you needed to give them more money because of COVID. What the fuck?
Yeah,
you guys didn't have to close down. You guys, customers didn't stop coming in. There's no difference. But they just bullshitted people to get them to donate more money to them because they can't make money anymore because nobody wants to watch their fucking shitty show.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. It's so obvious that it's changed. It's so obvious that it's changed, like not just with the content, but even just the personality. It's such a fucking corporate bland show these days.
And they, you know, they take money to go to these NATO conferences and give tongue baths to war criminals. I mean, Atticus Berrien tries to claim she didn't get paid to do interviews at a NATO conference. What, you're doing that pro bono, were you? You fucking liar. And you didn't have a goddamn critical thing to say to a bona fide war criminal? You piece of shit.
Jimmy. You can't interview working class people, though.
Yeah, but I can't interview working class people, but she could go give a tongue bath to fucking war criminal and get paid for it, you fucking puke.
Yeah. It really is ironic and hypocritical how many people seemingly can't make that connection where they're okay.
I got invited to one of those. You know, I got invited to one of those conferences too. Do you know that?
For real?
And you know what happened?
What?
I fucking challenged them at their opening press conference and I got kicked out of it.
Oh, shit.
That's what a fucking real lefty reporter does. I don't show up and go, oh, you guys, such an honor to meet you. I go, hey, what the fuck? This seems like a big front for NATO imperialism. Because it is.
Yeah.
It was in Oslo. And that's when Garry Kasparov called me a Putin's buddy. You sound like Putin's buddy. I have that video. It's up on my channel.
That reminds me, Jimmy, one other thing I have to ask you about is one of my favorite moments of all time on the internet is when you spit in Alex Trebek's face.
A legendary moment. The moment Jimmy Dore became an internet legend.
Yeah. Do you remember that?
I don't really remember that. I just remember Alex Jones showing up on the set, and instead of Cenk Uygur telling, hey, let's turn off the cameras and we'll come back when Alex leaves, he decided to start screaming like a maniac and try to start a fist fight with him.
It was hilarious.
And like a fucking maniac. Yeah. What are you doing? What are you going to, get in a shouting match on your fucking new show with a guy who crashed it? You turn off the cameras. And so it wasn't. So I went and got the security person.
Oh, really?
I did. Nobody else did. There's got to be 1,000 people on that stage with cameras and you couldn't get through. I went and I grabbed a security person and I said, could you come help someone crash our stage? And it was one person. They couldn't do anything. And so when I got up close enough to Alex Jones, and you know, he's hilarious. And I had just taken a swig of iced tea and he said that, hey, I'm just trying to be nice. And if you check the video, that is exactly what he says. He goes, hey, I'm just trying to be nice. And it was so funny. I just accidentally, it was a spit take. And that's what happened. So, but anyway.
I remember people got so mad about that.
Why did you run away? Why did you run away like a little bitch, they say. I go, because I don't know if you've seen Alex Jones. He will fucking crush me. That's why I ran away. I'm not a fucking moron. He's going to kill me. That's why I ran away.
Yeah, that was so funny. And I remember some people were going crazy. They were like, Jimmy Dore assaulted Alex Jones and all this like crazy shit.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's fun to make
great,
it. But then I did an interview with Alex Jones the next, not him, but his people in the studio. The next day I did an interview with him.
Oh, the next day?
The next day. So I was out covering the convention and they came and ambushed me. And they go, hey, we want to ask you some questions. And I look and I go, oh, fuck. I go, okay, let's go over here. Let's go somewhere private. I don't want people yelling at us. And so they did. We went to a kind of a semi-private place and we had actually, by the end of the interview, we were very friendly with each other. You should go check that out. That's a pretty good video. I think that's up on my channel too.
Interesting.
I mean, that's up on their channel. That's up on Alex Jones's channel.
Isn't that gone?
Oh yeah, it must be. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah. His channel's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, so I guess that's gone then. Fuck, you can't see it anymore.
Lost like tears and rain.
Thanks for that. Thanks, oligarchs. Thanks, Google, for making sure we never get to see that again.
Let me ask you guys a question. How do you feel about when you see lefties on YouTube advocating for censorship?
It blows our fucking minds, to be honest, because obviously a lot of times, you know, we may not like the fucking person that we're defending, or I mean, I don't give a shit if I like them or not. I might not even agree with them, right? But at the end of the day, you know, Gavin and I are smart enough to know that, holy shit, you know, we've just not gotten noticed by the algorithm yet. But if a bunch of people around us are getting censored, the boot's going to drop for us. And not only that, but yeah, we don't want anybody getting censored, because I would rather just fucking pick a fight with somebody that's saying stupid shit than have them, you know, have their lips zipped, essentially.
And it makes it look like they're trying to hide something. Like, you know, if you're some crazy motherfucker that wants to talk about like election trutherism or whatever, then you should be able to do that, because if they're gonna hide you and censor you, then everyone's gonna say, what are they trying to hide? Why are they sweeping that under the rug? You know what I mean? Like, just let people talk.
Reverse Streisand effect.
Yeah.
And let me just point out one thing too. You got to be cognitive of so that guy from the Young Turks who called Breonna Joy Gray an Uncle Tom.
Yeah, Benjamin Dixon.
And then his next tweet was, "Hey, why don't you bring me on your show and we can talk about it." So you see what that is. They do the same thing to Ryan Knight, right? The MSNBC contract people, they insult Ryan Knight on Twitter, and then they're like, "Why don't you come on the show and defend yourself?" So they're doing that for clicks. So that's a real underhanded way to boost your channel and get yourself, you insult someone in a bad faith way. They know it's a lie, and so you'll know they'll want to correct it. And so then they'll want to come on your show and engage you. Well, I don't do that. If you attack me in a bad faith way, I'm not going to engage you. Not going to engage you unless you're bigger than me. If you're bigger than me, if you're CNN or the Young Turks, then I'll fucking set the record straight, because you attacking me has elevated me now. So, but if someone bad faith attacks me and then asks for a debate or wants to come on my show, that's exactly what they're doing. That's a fucking trick.
Yeah.
That's a nefarious, underhanded bullshit way to try to boost their channel. And you saw it with Breonna Joy Gray, clear as fucking day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Fuck Benjamin Dixon, by the way. That completely ruined any respect I had for that dude. I'll just say that. But
okay. All right. Well, listen, guys, it's been a blast. Thanks for letting me talk to you. And
thanks so much.
I wish you good luck on your channel. Keep doing what you're doing, and I'll see you when I come to Kansas City.
Hell yeah. Take care, man.
You know, I used to play that. What is it called? Stanford and Sons. It used to be the comedy club in Kansas City.
Yeah. Remember that place? Yeah, I think Sanford's. I think that might actually. I mean, the building might still be there. I don't think it's open now.
No, I'm sure it's not. But
yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, I always had good times at Kansas City. All right, I'll see you guys.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jimmy. Have a great day.
Bye bye.
So that was fucking awesome and super surreal. And again, huge shout out to Jimmy Dore. While we have this fat audience listening to us and looking at our beautiful faces, I figured I would once again shout out our Patreons and let you guys know about that Discord server, which is coming up tonight. Again, if you want to get in on that and be part of our Discord community, you're going to want to head on over to patreon.com/thevanguardchannel. For as low as $1 a month, you can join the community and you'll get exclusive access to that Discord, as well as early access to some special videos we have coming up, and get a shout out at the beginning and end of our live streams, and just support an independent leftist show that's speaking truth to power, that's having interesting guests on, like, you know, people like Jimmy Dore. So again, thanks so much, everyone that watched, everyone that's hanging out with us. That's obviously the best form of support, is just hitting that subscribe button, hitting the like button and the notification. But if you do want to, the Patreon is in the link, or is in the description.
Yeah. Thanks for everybody that tuned in. This was a fun fucking show. Take care, everybody. Peace out. We'll be back on a little bit later tonight, I think.
Yeah. Everyone, peace out. Make sure to hit that subscribe button. And thanks so much for the super chats, those that gave them.
Yeah. Peace out, guys.